So just to remind you, we're on Wednesdays, we're proving a theorem. The theorem is about constructing knot invariants by integral means. And we have a few warm-up examples before the big construction, okay? And we're still in the warm-up examples, okay? And we're going to do the second today, but let me remind you what the first was. So the first was an invariant of two-component links. So we had a two-component link, and the components were called gamma 1 and gamma 2. And I defined an invariant in two different ways. So first way was, we said, project it to the plane, look at the link diagram, at the diagram for that link, and then the invariant will be one-half the sum over the crossings of in that diagram between the two components of the sign of each crossing. And we mentioned what the sign was last time, and there's no need to mention it again. And then the second definition, okay, so that was the combinatorial definition, and it's way easier than the integral definition, but unfortunately, it's the integral definition that will generalize. Anyway, the integral definition is as follows. So given gamma 1 and gamma 2, we've defined a map phi from the two-dimensional torus to S2, and the map was, well, given two points S1 and S2, we regard them as two points on the two-component link and consider the direction by which point 2 is viewed from point 1. Okay, and this, in other words, consider the normalized arrow going from gamma 1 of S1 to gamma 2 of S2. This direction vector, normalized, is in S2, and that's our map. Okay, and then pick a 2 form on S2. Which with total volume 1, so whose integral on S2 is 1. May as well pick, if you wish, you can pick the standard volume form, but any other volume, any other form with integral 1 will do. And then the linking number of gamma 1 and gamma 2 is also the integral of the pullback of omega to the torus, pullback via phi. Okay? And then we showed last time we showed invariants of this using Rademeister moves, and we showed last time invariants of this using homotopies. If there was a homotopy between two pairs of gamma 1, or two links, we showed that was invariant under homotopy using Stokes' theorem. And likewise, we've also shown that it's actually independent of omega, provided omega lives in this class, stays in this class. Okay, and that actually allows us to, or this gives one of the ways of proving that this is the same as that, because since it's independent of omega, you just can choose an omega which is concentrated in the poles, and then this integral becomes counting. Now, I should say that this phenomena, whatever, of replacing countings by integrals has many other appearances in mathematics, and generally speaking, it's called computing the degree of a map. Okay? So let me remind you what it is. Maybe even before reminding you what it is, let me remind you what is example number 0. Okay? So this is maybe example number 1. Example number 0 is the Cauchy theorem. So if you integrate, 1 over 2 pi I z, sorry, dz over 2 pi I z over the complex plane, over a contour in the complex plane, and the contour must avoid 0 because this is singular at 0. So you have some contour
in the complex plane which avoids zero, and you integrate this on that contour, then, well, on one hand it's an integral, on the other hand this integral is computes a topological invariant, and another way of computing the same topological invariant is to pick a ray going from this point to infinity and count with signs the number of times your path, your contour, cuts this ray. So it would be 2 in our case if the orientation is counterclockwise. Okay? Anyway, here's the general theory. So with no proofs, though all the proofs are essentially the same as in this specific case, and also no proofs because presumably it's the job of core topology 1 to do these proofs. I hope they did it. Okay? Anyway, so maybe I'll call it an aside on degrees. So aside on degrees. So given a map phi going from mn to nn, so a smooth map between oriented n manifolds, and it is important then that the two manifolds will have the same dimension, you can define the degree of this map phi in several ways, and the theorem that I will not show is that always make sense, and that they are equivalent. Okay? So the first way is the following. So the first way is a computation you do in the nth dimensional homology group of n. So I think it's a part of, what is the theorem called? It's a part of Poincaré duality, but that particular part, I don't know if it has an independent name. Okay? So there is a standard theorem that says that if you have an n-dimensional manifold, then it has a canonical class in a generator in the nth homology group, in its nth homology group, the so-called fundamental class. Okay? And furthermore, this group is equal to Z, and it's the Z generated by this fundamental class. The fundamental class is often called the bracket, or denoted by bracket N. So it's kind of N itself. Okay? And then, the formula is you take the push forward using the map phi of the fundamental class of M, and that will be an element in the homology group of N, so you figure out which multiple of the generator it is. So slightly loosely speaking, you divide it by the fundamental class of N, and that gives an integer. Of course, it's not really division, because it's not a field, okay? Well, what I really mean is you find which multiple of that is this, okay? Okay, that's one definition. Second definition is, so the dual to the homology is the cohomology, and then the dual to the statement that the cohomology is Z, that homology is Z, is the statement that Hn of n is equal to Z, and it is generated by a certain homology class, and you know, I like the Ramco homology, but it's not essential to use the. In fact, it's sort of in some sense counterproductive to use the Ramco homology because you lose the integers. But still, I use the Ramco homology language. So this cohomology class is generated, is the class of some differential form omega, where omega belongs to the n form, the n forms on n. And then the next definition is exactly the definition that I used here. So you integrate over m the pullback via psi of omega. And then the last definition is the following. You pick some generic y inside the target space. So first you have to define what generic means, then you have to prove that most points of the target space are generic, so you can pick one. But anyway, generic means that the inverse image, so you see you have a map from something n-dimensional to something n-dimensional, generically you expect the inverse image to be finite. So generic means the inverse image is finite, and furthermore, near each inverse image, the map is locally a homeomorphism. So it maps a neighborhood to a neighborhood. So anyway, once you pick such a thing, this is the sum over all x's inside the inverse image of y of the degree at the point x of the map phi, where this requires a definition. And the definition is, well, you see, near the point x, phi is going to be an isomorphism. Sorry, what is it called? Diffeomorphism, which is invertible. Or is it included in the definition of diffeomorphism? I don't know. Anyway, it's going to, and remember that both my manifolds were oriented, so locally, phi will be either orientation preserving or orientation reversing, and depending on that, the degree will be either plus one or minus one. Okay? So this is a review. I'm not going to prove any of these things. Okay? But in particular, we get a new interpretation of the linking number, meaning, or not a new interpretation, a new language, okay? Meaning it's the degree of the map phi written here. Okay. End of story. Any comments? Any questions? Okay. So now comes the emptiest discussion in mathematics. And it's going to take the rest of this hour and a part of the next one. So let's, in fact, celebrate it. The emptiest discussion in math. So we will construct in two ways, not just one way, an invariant of knots valued in the wonderful group Z mod Z. Okay? Which, as you know, is sort of a trivial group. So in fact, is the trivial group. So, in fact, I can tell you in some sense what the value of the invariant is. Zero. Okay? But it's not a pointless. So I'm lying, of course. It's not a pointless discussion. Because the point will be that later on, the numerator will grow, will become bigger and bigger when we will have more sophisticated formulas to play with, but the denominator will always remain z. Okay? So later on, this silly discussion, well, not so silly, it's actually kind of nice, will become will actually have content. Okay? Okay, so let's do the emptiest discussion of in mathematics. So what I want is to try to generalize, or I don't know if generalize is the right word, try to adapt this discussion to the case where there is only one component. So instead of having 2 points lying on two different components, I will look at a knot and put 2 points on the same component. And as before, study the direction of the map going from one point to the other. And in fact, I'm not sure I even need to, you know what, I will define it, okay? So this direction of the map will be phi of S1 and S2. And it is given by essentially the same formula. The only difference is that I don't need the subscripts anymore. So it will be gamma of S1 minus gamma of S2, sorry, of S2 minus gamma of S1 divided by the norm. And it's a map phi going through, defined on a slightly different space. It is defined on the space which I will call C sub 2 of S1, and it takes values in the same space as before, S2. So I have to tell you what C sub 2 is. It's the space of configurations of two distinct points on the circle. It has to be distinct, otherwise the denominator will be zero. So it's the collection of all points or of all pairs x, y, where x and y both belong to S1, and x and y are different from each other. Okay? And what does this space look like? So, okay. I can choose, I guess x and y play two roles. I mean, maybe I've switched to x and y. So I can choose x1 to be whatever I want. Right? So this is S1 of X. And then Y is some positive distance between 0 and 1, strictly between 0 and 1, further on from X. Okay? So the curve is oriented, so move. Some distance between 0 and 1 along the curve from the point x. Okay? So it's S1 of x cross an open interval 0, 1, whose parameter I will call z, where y is x plus z. Okay? And you know what? I guess I'm assuming that the circle is parameterized from 0 to 1. Okay, maybe I should have called it 0 to 2 pi. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Okay? And again, the picture, if you wish, is it's a cylinder. Okay? Am I right? I think so. Okay. So, oh, sorry, but I should have said it's an open cylinder. I'm not sure how to draw open. 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 Okay. Good. So let's define eta of gamma. So eta of gamma is a candidate for what would be an invariant. What hopefully will be an invariant. Okay? So let's define eta of gamma to be why did I do 1 over 4 pi in my notes? I didn't need to do 1 over 4 pi. Sorry, just mistake. So just the integral over the configuration space C2 of S1 of the pullback. So basically, I'm imitating the previous definition. The only thing I've changed is the configuration space changed from being T to being this C2. Now, unfortunately, this space is not compact. And if you look very carefully at the theory about integrals of differential forms, you need a compact domain. Okay? So this doesn't quite make sense. Okay? Now, there is a reason why you need a compact domain. The reason is that if the domain is not compact, even if the form is continuous, it may blow up to infinity near the boundary of the domain. So the integral might not be well defined. And in fact, it looks like the form blows up to infinity near the boundary of the domain, because at some point I wrote phi star of omega explicitly last class, and if you remember, so basically it involves taking the differential of this map phi. Since this map phi has a denominator, the differential will have a denominator too, and the denominator goes to zero when the two points approach each other. So you have a singularity near the edge of the domain, and it's not at all clear that this is integrable. But it is. Why? So it's integrable because the map phi, so maybe I'll write it here, so phi extends in a continuous way, in a uniquely continuous way, or smooth way, smoothly, to C till C bar, or tilde or bar, C till C bar, sorry, 2 of S1, which is the compactified configuration space. Which is, I'm using closure notation, so I want to say the closure of this configuration space, but the word closure of a space doesn't make sense. It's only closure of a subspace makes sense. So I really have to be explicit about what I mean by the closure. Okay? So what I mean by the closure is simply take the previous configuration space and replace whatever was open by closed. Okay? So this is S1 of X cross the closed unit interval of Z, where again the two points, sort of the two what is the analog of the two points is x and y, which is x plus z. Okay? Now, notice that it's not quite it's not quite the this is not the same, just to make it clear, this is not the same as just removing the inequality here. This is not the same as the set of all of xy in S1 such that x may or may not be equal to y. Okay? I didn't just reinsert the diagonal. Really what I did is I doubled the diagonal. So now, because you see, in both the case where z is equal to 0 and the case where z is equal to 1, the point corresponding to x and the point corresponding to sort of x and y would be the same. So I've doubled the diagonal. So but what happens is that instead of having, so you know, if you want a picture, so the picture is I have two points on the circle, x and y, but there are two ways by which y can approach x. It can either approach x from the right, the way I wrote it now, which means z approaches 1, or from the left, which means the way I've drawn it here, which means z is approaching 0. Okay? Okay. So, well, I made an assertion that phi extends smoothly. Now I have to justify it. But you see, if it extends smoothly, the definition of the extension is sort of canonical. You see, the map phi is the direction vector from x to y. Okay? When y approaches x, this direction vector approaches the negative of the tangent vector at the point x. This is if you approach from the right. If you approach from the left, it just approaches the tangent vector. Okay? So the moral is, so this unique extension is by setting phi of x and 0 to be the limit as epsilon goes down to 0 of gamma at x plus epsilon minus gamma at x divided by the norm, which is simply the gamma dot at the point x. And likewise, phi of x comma 1, which is equal to, well, I will not write, but the thing is clear, which is the negative of gamma dot. Oh, sorry, here it should be divided by the norm. Okay? I suppose from this point on, for convenience, I will assume that the curve had been parameterized so that the so-called arc length parameterization. So the tangent is always of unique length. So you walk along the curve at speed 1 at all times, and then I don't need to divide by the norm. Okay? Good. Good. So, well, the next question is this an invariant? So, suppose gamma is replaced by gamma sub, do I want it sub t or up t? I don't know. Gamma up t, so I really have a homotopy between gammas, okay? Then I will get phi up t, right? I want to check if it's an invariant. I do exactly the same thing as I did last time. I will get phi up t, which will be a map from C2 compactified of S1 cross an interval into S2. And what does this look like? I suppose it looks like a cylinder now closed in itself cross an interval. How do you draw it? I don't know. You have a whole interval worth of cylinders. Okay? I suppose, you know, you could...
You could draw it as a thickened cylinder.
Yeah, you could draw it as a thickened cylinder, but I'm not sure if there's much benefit to it, yes?
Is it more natural to make X and Y unordered so that the image space is RP2 instead or something like that? And then everything actually is compact?
No. No. Why compact? I mean, you still have the issue that X could approach Y.
But then it the line approaches, so you don't have a directed line anymore, you just have a line. And then the
right.
line approaches the tangent line.
Right, so still the configuration space is non-compact, and I have to compactify it. And by and the compactification will just mean reinsert a diagonal. Oh, I see. So, okay. RP2 is not orientable.
So you might have trouble.
Right, you'll have trouble integrating. Thanks. Okay. 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 So now, as before, let's consider the integral over C2 compactified cross the interval of D of phi T pullback of omega. Okay? So, on the one hand, D commutes with phi, D commutes with pullback, so I can write it as pullback of d omega. And the pullback of d omega is, d omega is equal to zero because it's a two-form on a two-dimensional space. So on one hand, this is equal to zero. This is good. On the other hand, by Stokes' theorem, this is the integral over the pullback, of the pullback of omega via phi t over the boundary of configuration space cross an interval. And the bad news is that the boundary of configuration space cross an interval has two components, more than two components, but sort of two different sources. So one source is because configuration space itself had boundary, and take that boundary and cross it by an interval. And the other reason, and the other part is because of the interval here, okay? The homotopy interval. So let's do the homotopy interval first. This is sort of what we expect. So we get the integral of phi 0 pullback of omega on simply the configuration space cross 0. So this is the initial knot you started from. Or the invariant, so this is eta of gamma 0, minus, I think this actually should come with sine minus, plus the integral over the configuration space cross 1 of phi at times 1 pullback of omega, and this is what we would call eta of gamma 1. But unfortunately, we have two more terms, and you can check that the two terms right from the two boundaries of configuration space, and you can check that the two terms add up rather than cancel. Namely, because you see, both of them will involve pulling back omega, pulling back omega using gamma dot, right? Because both these boundaries correspond to the diagonal, so you'll end up pulling back omega using gamma dot, and in one case you'll be pulling back using gamma dot, and in the other case you'll be pulling back using negative gamma dot, but on the other hand the two are oriented differently because they belong to different boundaries, the upper boundary or the lower boundary, so they will add up. So you'll get plus twice the integral over S1 cross an interval. So this is S1 of x, which is equal to y, and the interval is the interval of the homotopy, t, of the pullback of omega. And this is bad news. So let me take a closer look at this bad news. So given a curve in R3, here is a curve in R3. And in fact, it can have self-intersection. Self-intersections. Over here, I only look at the case where x is equal to y. So I don't care. I'm actually looking at the curve at a single point. I don't even care if it self-intersects. Anyway, given a curve in R3, there is something called the Gauss map of this curve. And the Gauss map is a map from the curve to S2, and it's the map which maps every point to its tangent, to the tangent at that point. So basically, you turn on a laser pointer and you slide it along the curve, and that defines a curve in heavens, right? In the S2 that's around us. Okay? So gamma goes to gamma dot, and gamma dot is really a curve in heavens. Okay? And now I deform the, so okay, so I have, okay, now I'll drop the curve anymore because it's just a mess to carry it with me, but I have a curve in heavens, right? And now I deform the curve. When I deform the curve in heavens kind of in itself slides across heavens. So it spans some area. This area is what's computed here. Okay? So the area, so the error, the failure to be an invariant is, well, you take the, you look at the Gauss map. It's a curve in heavens. This curve slides as you homotop the homotop the original curve, and the area that it spans is the failure to be an invariant, right? And this, by the way, and again, this is a local quantity in some sense, because you only need to look at the diagonal. You only need to look at the original curve and its derivatives at one point, its derivative to compute the tangent. I don't need to know how two points along the curve see each other. I only need to know what happens at the diagonal, on the diagonal. So in particular, right, when I deform the curve, the error will change, or not error, not the error, the value of eta will change smoothly, but nothing particularly exciting will happen when the curve will pass through itself,
right? If the curve will cross through itself, eta will change, but you know, if you move epsilon, eta will change by epsilon. Eta will remain continuous as the curve crosses itself. Are you okay? So it sort of seems like we should be able to recover something out of it. Namely, let's do the same trick that we did in the Jones case. Meaning, let's add to eta a counter term that will change in the opposite way. Now, what will this counter term be? Or how will you pick such a counter term? So, you take your ball, you take heavens, okay, you take S2. We have a curve in heavens, okay? We find a disk whose boundary is this curve. So I guess, you know, if this is the curve, again, the curve is not the original knot. It's the Gauss map of the knot. I'll find a disk whose boundary is this curve and compute the area that this disk spans. Okay? And then when the knot deforms, the disk will move along and the area will change, and the change in the area of the disk will be exactly the change in eta, well, up to some factor of 2. So then if I subtract from eta twice the area of this disk, I will get an invariant. Okay? So it's looking good. I'm getting an invariant in Z, in fact. We'll see that it's not quite as good, but okay. So let's make it formal. Okay? Here's the nicest way to make it formal. So, take the original phi. The original phi was defined on... So, take the original phi. It was defined on a cylinder. Now, I stopped looking at the homotopy, now I'm looking at an individual curve. So I have a map from here to here, and it's called phi. What I will do, and on the boundary, the map phi is gamma dot here and negative gamma dot here. Okay? So what I will do is I will find a disk whose boundary maps to the same thing. In other words, I will extend the map phi by gluing a disk on the top, which maps via a map beta into S2, so that beta has the property that beta restricted to the boundary of the disk, so this is D2, is equal to gamma dot. Okay? And, well, I may as well use the inverse extension on the opposite extension on the other side. So on the other side, I will just put a glue in negative beta, and now I got a map from S2 to S2. Okay? So, let's call this big map phi, so this complete map, let's call it phi extended by beta. Okay? So, moral, given beta from the disk to S2 such that beta restricted to the boundary of the disk is equal to gamma dot, define phi up beta as on the right, and then let's define the corrected eta invariant, which now I will call the self-linking of the knot gamma, and in fact I'll call it SL1 because it's version number 1. So I will define SL1 of, but now it depends both on gamma and on beta, okay? And it will be the degree of phi beta. So, you know, if you want, you can call it the degree. If you want, you can use phi beta to pull back omega and compute the integral. It doesn't matter. Okay? And of course, this being a degree, being the degree of a map from S2 to S2, is an integer invariant. It's in Z. Okay? Well, it still depends on beta. Okay, it's not an invariant of the original knot. It's the invariant of the original knot with a bit of an additional information. But this additional information is a curve in S2, and it completely doesn't care about the original crossings of the knots, of the knot. Okay, so somehow it's sort of less information, or it might be less information. Okay, now let's inspect that. Okay. Maybe I'll do an example. So, what is SL1 of the unknotted circle? Now, what's the Gauss map of the unknotted circle? The unknotted circle is just the tangent to it will be a horizontal sort of tangent, which is always sort of which circles around the equator. Okay, so I need a disk whose boundary is that. So I'll take the upper hemisphere. Okay. Now, strictly speaking, this upper hemisphere is in some sense rotated by 90 degrees relative to this, right? Because if the radius vector is going here, the tangent is 90 degrees to it. So in some sense, it's rotated by 90 degrees, but there is no way to see it. Okay? And anyway, what will be the value of the invariant? Well, it's basically the phi part here compresses to being the equator. Beta gives me the upper hemisphere, negative beta gives me the lower hemisphere. I just get the map that maps the sphere to itself via essentially the identity, maybe rotated a bit, and the degree of that is 1. So SL1 of the unknot with the most obvious beta is 1. Okay? Now I claim that in general, SL1 of let's start with that. So SL1 of the anode with any other beta will be an odd integer. Why? So I suppose we first have to understand what are all the possible... I've run out of time. So I'll just tell you what the conclusion is, and we will continue next time. If you look at the syllabus, I knew it will take 2 hours, so I'm not behind. So basically, I will show in general that SL1 of any gamma and any beta is an odd integer, that the choice of beta is topologically a choice of an integer, but changing this integer changes the value of the invariant by 2. So basically, you get an invariant in 2z plus 1 modulo 2z, which is not what I said in the beginning, but it's equally stupid. Okay? But what will happen later on is that this will get more complicated and this not. So, okay. So let's stop here.